ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, wrestling fans worldwide, to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of one of the largest and oldest wrestling families on the planet.
The Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The Stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the Stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the Stud is here.
Please welcome the creator of the popular 605 podcast and the president of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, your co-host, the great Ryan Last.
Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another edition of Ron Fuller's Studcast. I am the great Ryan Last, and of course, it's my pleasure to be with you once again as the Tennessee Stud's going to take us up and down the Smoky Mountains, sharing with us wrestling history, his personal wrestling history, and boy, we can't wait for that. And without any further ado, the man of the hour, the host of the Studcast, the legendary Tennessee Stud himself, Ron Fuller. Ron, how are you today?
I'm great, fine, just absolutely fabulous, my man. Got a light and saddled up, and I'm ready to take a ride, my man. This should be a good one today. Got a lot in it. I don't know if it'll all fit into an hour, but, we'll take the shot at it. I think I got a lot of things I'd like to talk about, and we're in a great time frame here, getting ready for the second Coliseum show, and just really looking forward to this one.
I think it's going to be a fun ride. I think it also may be a bumpy ride at times, considering some of the personalities you're about to talk about this week here on the show. But hey, before we get going, before we return to March of 1975, we want to thank everyone. All of the weekly Studcast fans, all the listeners, and especially the huge number of new listeners that we've recently gained. And thank you, and welcome to the Studcast. I'm sure you've been hearing us for the last several weeks, but we really do appreciate you jumping on board and joining the Stud as he goes and shares the wrestling history of his family, the South, and so much more. This is such a unique show, and we're really happy to have so many new people listening to it. And, of course, we want to remind everyone, the Super Studcast. If you enjoy the Studcast, we do more the Super Studcast and the rest of the story each month for patrons of the show at patreon.com/studcast or tnstud.com. You can get in the door for only $2.99. And we have so many amazing episodes for everything from Andre the Giant to the latest one with Les Thatcher on the air, talking about Southeastern Wrestling, covering the Georgia War, the Knoxville War, Terry Funk, Stan Hansen, and so many more. Hey, even Robert Fuller. You can hear that at tnstud.com or, once again, patreon.com/studcast for only $2.99. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. But Ron, where are we going today?
Well, we're going to get the complete answer to last week's episode called Who is Al Velasco? The results of the entire card for March 14th, 1975. We're going to announce the entire card for the following show as well, the Second Coliseum Show on Sunday afternoon, March 23rd, 1975. We're going to talk about what happens on back-to-back TV shows promoting the Coliseum card. Here's some historic audio from Ron Wright interview, which is just, I think fans will be captivated by this, and finish with a deeper dive into the controversy concerning my Southeastern television commentator, Big Jim Hess. Find out more about him and also my thoughts at that time about the future of wrestling on the present television station I was on when I bought Knoxville in 1974. So, a pretty darn decent episode, I think. We're going to cover a lot of ground today, so I'm going to turn lightning loose, and we'll get up in the saddle and take off here, my man.
Well, I'll tell you, that's a lot you said there, Ron. Where are we going to begin?
Well, Let's begin with the results of Friday, March 14, 1975, in Knoxville's Chilhowee Park. This was an important night, obviously, leading into the Coliseum show, which is only 9 days after this event. The first match of the night was Jerry Bryant against Charlie Fulton. They wrestled in a 20-minute time limit draw. That wasn't the best match ever, but fans seemed to be pretty much into it. Second match was a much better bout with two great workers, Rocky Smith, the club-footed inferno without his mask, versus Johnny Gray, the young star from Australia. Johnny Gray, I think, is his second appearance, and Rocky's been there on quite a few events. This match also ends up in a draw, but the fans really enjoyed this one and probably would have preferred a longer time limit than the 20 minutes. Match was a good match. Maybe should have set that for 30 minutes. The third match on that card on the 14th captivated the crowd as Professor Dale Lewis put up his $1,000 bill against his toughest opponent yet, professional or otherwise, the 400-pound Man Mountain Blackwell. In a very unusual move, I booked Blackwell without ever seeing him wrestle. He actually called me and introduced himself and asked me if I could give him a shot on my card. When he told me he weighed 400 pounds, I was kind of intrigued about that. And so I booked him, but I didn't expect him to be able to move like he did for a 400-pound guy. This match got everyone involved, as it appeared the 400-pound challenger was going to win on several occasions. He had Lewis on his back several times. Lewis had dominated all opponents from the audience or his professional opponents since he started these challenge matches for me 3 months earlier. Blackwell pushed him physically and had him on the edge of being counted out several times, like I said, during that match. Lewis had great heat at this point because he had beaten every opponent over that three-month period, all 12 professional opponents, and at least 36 challengers from the crowd he had wrestled during this three-month period of time. His matches were getting a little dull because of his domination, but the giant Blackwell made this one a very interesting evening. And I watched some of it, and I had never seen Blackwell, as I said, work, because he'd called me and asked me about putting him on the card. But I was impressed enough that I'm going to bring him back to Knoxville years later, and I'm going to make a star out of this guy. I remember a quick story about him. You know, when he came back years later, and I booked him in a match with the Wrestling Bear in Harlan, Kentucky. And I remember he came to me and said, "Ron, would you have a problem if I threw that bear over the top rope tonight?" There was a couple of other guys who were sitting around that heard the comment, and we all laughed just like you did. I laughed too. I was like, "Well, gosh, you know, I mean, what do you tell a guy when he asks you something like that?" So I said, "Hell yeah, go ahead. If you can throw him over the top rope, throw that bear out of the ring." So he actually went for it. He actually tried to do it in the course of the match, and I went out and kind of watched that match because I wanted to see if he was really going to try to do it. And he got the bear so close to going over the top rope, the bear's handler, I could hear him screaming from back in the dressing room where I was standing watching the match from. And when he came back, the bear trainer, the bear handler came to me, and he said, "That's it." He says, "I will never work your territory again." He goes, "What are you thinking, man?" He goes, "You know, the guy's bigger than my bear." He says, "He's as big as my bear." And he actually, I think he was going to throw my bear over the top rope. And I said, "Yeah, he was told to try. Go ahead if he wanted to." And the guy says, "That's it for me." He says, "Don't ever call me again, Ron. I will never work your territory again." So I ended up, that was the end of my bear matches. But it was well worth it. I mean, the guys were really impressed to watch it that night, too. So, you know, the next match on the card is Jimmy Golden and Les Thatcher against Dutch Mantel and John Foley. And this is for the Tennessee Tag Championships. Now, this is the card of the 14th of March, 9 days before the big Coliseum show. This match was great, and the champions got disqualified, and they lost because they really out-wrestled Golden and Thatcher. But Thatcher and them really took them really, really to as far as they could go without losing and without having to get DQ'd. Obviously, Golden and Thatcher can't win the title by DQ, so the title stays with Mantell and Les Thatcher. I mean, Mantell and Foley. And this one was a really great match, and it was a quality opponent. And it's going to be, Jimmy really stole the show at the end of this match. I remember, man, I got a really good hot tag from Les, and Jimmy's going to get his shot to the next show in the Coliseum against a real quality opponent and a guy that he's going to bitch to me about quite a bit when he sees the card. He's going to end up on that Coliseum show with Danny Hodge. So he's got his work cut out for him the next show. The semifinal match on that night was Ron Wright against Danny Hodge. And obviously Wright did not have to have the wrestling skills that Hodge has. But he had all his dirty tricks in his bag, and he sure pulled them all out on Hodge. And the fans loved the fact that there he is, a baby face, and he's more of a heel than the heels are in most cases. And that was really hard for Hodge. And Hodge even commented to me about it. And when he got back in the dressing room, he goes, gosh, you know, he should have been the heel in the match. And I said, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Every time I work with him, I get the same feeling. Wrestlers really didn't particularly care to work with Ron Wright as a babyface, but I didn't mind it. It was the fans' enjoyment that made it work for me, and Ron Wright had those fans in his pocket. He certainly did. And the main event was the focus on the last stud cast, and especially Ron Wright. And if you remember last time we talked about it, Ron Wright was so mad. He said something crazy is going to happen there basically next Friday night. And so I was defending my Southern title this night against the Cuban champion, Al Velasco. And he's an absolute unknown in Knoxville. Ron Wright has spent the entire TV show the Saturday before complaining about not getting a title shot after beating me in the boxing match. And he ends that TV show with a threat, obviously, like I just mentioned, to get involved in this match. And he certainly did. From the beginning of it until the very end of it, he got involved of it. And he came down to the ring when they rang the bell. He took the microphone from the announcer before I even got to the ring. My opponent, Velasco, entered the ring first. And he approached Velasco, got in his face, and he started by asking him on the microphone to give up his title shot to Ron Wright, and let him wrestle me for the title. Well, Velasco spoke very little English, and it didn't take fans long to realize, but Wright was not to be denied. He could not get Velasco to say, yeah, you can have this title match. He really couldn't even answer the question, and he might not even know what Wright was saying to him. So the announcer tried to retrieve the microphone from Wright, but Wright refused. And as I started from the dressing room, he saw me coming, and he started on me as I approached the ring. He started calling me a coward and making fun of Al Velasco. Who is this guy you're going to wrestle? Look at him. He's not tough. He doesn't have the qualities to be in the ring here. So he's now getting upset. Velasco's getting upset with Wright as well as I was. But the crowd loved it because it's exactly what he said he was going to do on TV the prior Saturday. The announcer finally gets a microphone away from Wright, and he starts to announce the match with Velasco being introduced first. Well, Wright refused to leave the ring, and he and Velasco, while Velasco's being introduced, are face-to-face, and they're arguing in the ring. So I see what's going on. I take off my jacket. I take off my belt. I put them real quickly in the corner and slide into the ring. And as I'm being introduced, the referee sees me come into the ring. I've been introduced. Velasco has been introduced. And Wright and Velasco are standing face-to-face still arguing. So they ring the bell. As soon as they do, I just shoot in there behind Velasco. I drive him right face first into Wright, and it shoots Wright backwards out onto the floor. And O'Connor Rowe, Velasco, puts me on top of him. 1, 2, 3. The match is over. I beat Velasco in 3 to 5 seconds. I don't know exact time of it, but and then as soon as it's over, then here comes Wright back in the ring. You know, Referee's raising my hand, and Wright's in the ring behind me, and he comes back in. He brings a damn chair with him, and he hits me in the back of the head with a metal chair while I'm getting my hand raised. Crowd pops. Obviously, they love everything he does, and not because I'd won, but because Wright had kept his word from TV about something bad's going to happen in this match. While I was down, he goes in his tights and he gets his chisel. Before I could even get up to my feet, Velasco gets to him. Velasco's upset because Wright caused him to lose in 3 seconds. You know, they both hit heads and he gets pinned real quick. So Wright stops him and hits Velasco with his chisel. And I roll out of the ring onto the concrete floor. The referee starts ringing the bell again as now all hell's beginning to break loose. There's been a 3 to 5 second match. I'm the winner, but I'm down in the floor, and Wright's already busted my opponent with his chisel, and he comes down on the floor to get me with his chisel. But I get him on the way out of the ring, and I once again take that chisel away from him, and I give him a shot. And now they're both bleeding, him and Velasco, bad. And I go start toward the dressing room. Well, you know, as I do, Wright follows me. So does Velasco get involved. He's trying to fight Wright. He's trying to fight me. Wright's fighting me. The crowd is fighting all of us. And it now this raucous crowd has turned into a riotous crowd. And my friend Mac, he's refereeing the match. So he gets behind me to protect my back, which, you know, he's been around wrestling for a while now. He understands how this all works. And as the three of us start up the stairs in this building, you had to go to the second floor to get to the dressing room. And you had to go to this little staircase that made a turn. It was a very, very dangerous spot. Mac gets right on my back. The police are doing their best to keep the fans back as the three of us fight up toward the dressing room. Well, it's absolute pandemonium in the building. When I enter the safety of the dressing room, Mac's still behind me. And when I caught my breath and I sat down, Mac's standing beside me, and Dale Lewis looks at him and says to him, he goes, hey, Mac, what's that sticking out of your butt? And, during a near riot or a riot, things happen so fast, and you're so focused on everything and everybody around you that you can get hurt and not even realize it until you get back to the dressing room. And this is one of those incidents. I look at Mac, and he did have a knife sticking out of his rear of his pants, and where a fan had stabbed him in the ass on his way from the ring. So it had been one of the maybe the wildest and most dangerous 5 second match of all time. I mean, with something as drastic and dramatic as the entirety of this match, plus the dangerous fight to the dressing room, all of that's been recorded. Now, this film here is going to set the stage perfectly for the TV show the next day, and also for the main event on the second Coliseum show, which is 9 days later.
Did you find it advantageous to have the TV show air the day after the Knoxville event?
Yeah, it works in a good way because you do have that film that you had shot the night before, and it gives you something to show that's going to build toward your next Friday night. To me, the ideal situation to have a television in a town is you run your TV in the afternoon on a Saturday and you run the town that night. But Knoxville had always been a Friday town, and there was no way to change the perception of that or change the tradition of it. So, you know, I felt pretty comfortable with that. It's going to come to benefit me that 9 days difference between this Friday night and the next time we run the Coliseum, because it's going to give me two shows to be able to promote that Coliseum show. So let's just talk about the card for the March 23rd Coliseum show. We haven't actually talked about the entire card. And let's go ahead and do that now. I'd like to acknowledge where the talent came from. And if they were not my usual crew, a lot of these guys are my usual crew, but the talent is coming from a lot of other places for this Coliseum show. And maybe a little of background even on some of these wrestlers. The opening match, you've got From West Tennessee, you got Jerry Jarrett against Phil Hickerson. I mean, obviously, Jerry Jarrett is booking over there on the western side of Tennessee. That's Nick and Roy's territory at this point. And he is bringing guys over to the east side for me because he's using a lot of my guys over in Memphis on Mondays for him. So
Hickerson would end up having a pretty big role in Southeastern in the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. He is going to, for sure. And from Western, second match is also going to come from west side of Tennessee, Tojo Yamamoto against Lorenzo Parenti. Parenti's a pretty good worker. Tojo is absolute legend in Tennessee and had been to Knoxville on many, many occasions, I'm sure, prior to my getting there. That third match on the Coliseum card is going to be Danny Hodge against Jimmy Golden. I'm really looking for a tremendous match there, and hopefully Jimmy's going to get himself over even more within the first 3 or 4 weeks he's there. Fourth match is a $1,000 challenge match, Dale Lewis versus Rocket Monroe, with Lewis going to wrestle some of the fans from the audience after the match. That usually depended on how long the match was with his professional opponent, but it's going to be a big night for Dale Lewis. He's really going to push himself to do more for me than ever because it's in the Coliseum and it's a lot bigger crowd than normally been having in Chihuahua Park where the smaller building was. Fifth match on that card is the Tennessee Tag Championship match. Dutch Mantel and John Foley against Les Thatcher and Nelson Royal, who are both pretty well over at this point. So is Mantel and Foley. That's going to be a tremendous match, I figure, when I book it. Sixth match from the Mid-Atlantic Promotions in Charlotte, North Carolina, Ric Flair against Ken Patera. Tremendous match that will be, no doubt. I'm friends with Rick, have been around him some in St. Louis. I had never met Patera, but I'm impressed with, obviously, the look of Patera, and he's a fantastic athlete, an Olympic athlete at that. Seventh match is guys from Detroit, the Mid-American Heavyweight Championship, Crazy Luke Graham against Bobo Brazil. Wow, tremendous. I wanted to bring Bobo there. Knoxville did not have a big black population, but I still wanted to bring Bobo because he was one of the most recognizable names in wrestling because of wrestling magazines and everything else. Bobo was on everything back in those days, and this match was going to be a great match on the card, and I knew that fans were going to get into Bobo. And the main event that night is going to be a Texas death match because of what happens in this match with Al Velasco and the fight to the dressing room. It just made sense. The Texas death match for the Southern Heavyweight Championship, and the winner takes all, and it's going to be me, obviously, versus Ron Wright. I think if you think about this, Brian, when I look at this card, the thing that really jumps at me right away is there are three Olympians on this one card. Two of them are wrestlers, Danny Hodge and Dale Lewis, had been on the Olympic wrestling teams, and Ken Patera on the Olympic weightlifting team. So that's a tremendous card right there. Knoxville's never seen anything like this card.
Ticket prices, ringside $5. Followed by $4, general admission $3, and children's general admission $2. And one more thing here from the newspaper in Knoxville. Wrestling at Coliseum at 3 Sunday. There will be no wrestling Friday night at Chilhowie Park. The weekly show has been moved to the Civic Coliseum and changed to Sunday afternoon at 3. Southern heavyweight champion Ron Fuller will defend his title against Ron Wright in a Texas death match in the main event Sunday.
To me, a great card. When I look back at it, I still believe it's an absolutely great card. I know it's got to be the best card that's ever been witnessed in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're still not filling up the Coliseum, that's for sure. But this card is going to, I believe, push and go better than the first one that we did, which was a World Heavyweight Championship match with Jack Briscoe and Nelson Royal. So,
and the newspaper ad even says Knoxville's biggest card ever.
Yeah, You know, and that to me is exactly what this card is. And now that we know what the card was, let's talk about the TV the next day, because I now have a tremendous event scheduled, and the extraordinary 5-second match and its aftermath on film. And I also have another ace in the hole for the event. I just said a minute ago, I have two Saturday televisions between this Friday night that we just finished and the Coliseum show on the Sunday afternoon of the 23rd. That's going to make a huge difference, I expect, because your television is your best medium for advertisement. So let's talk about the first show to promote this Coliseum card on the day following this match between me and Al Velasco. And I talked over the film about what happened in this very short match the night before. Obviously, I'm complaining about Ron Wright. He says he's going to come down there and he's going to make a mess of things. And he does, obviously. It's right here on film. And, you know, and I get my opportunity to talk about the Texas Death Match and how that works and why this is going to be the way to settle all this between me and Ron Wright. And the winner of that, it's not just going to be the winner of Texas Death Match. They're going to win the belt as well. So First TV also had a live match with the Tennessee Tag Champions, Dutch Mantell and John Foley, getting a big win. And they come out of the ring and have themselves an interview immediately following the match. This First TV after promoting the second Coliseum show is going to be filled with the actual competitors that's going to be on that card. And there's the first match of the television, Mantell and Foley getting a good win, come out of there talking about wrestling and defending their titles against Thatcher and Royal. And this show contains a great interview recorded by the Sheik's TV crew in Ohio with Bobo Brazil. And this short interview is absolutely necessary, and it's necessary because the fans have never seen this star, and they have been so disappointed in so many instances before I take over here by substitutions. So I figure that if I've got Bobo Brazil cutting an interview and fans actually see what he looks like, and they know then that he's probably going to show up, and I know he is going to show up. They were killing the towns before by having these stars supposedly that are going to show up and then not show up and sticking somebody in to take their place. So this was a necessity, I thought, to have an interview shot by Bobo that he sends to me. I didn't expect him to come and wrestle on TV. Couldn't get that to happen. But the interview is even more important because it's going to convince fans he's going to actually be there instead of being substituted. And Bobo really put the fans over in the city of Knoxville in his interview. And he asked me 3 weeks earlier when I talked to him about it, "What do you want me to talk about?" I said, "Man, just put over the town and the fans." And he did a fabulous job of that, having never been there. And that interview then is followed by young Jimmy Golden getting a great win on TV. And the great part about this is while this match is taking place, Danny Hodge, who is his opponent for the Coliseum show, is going to sit at the desk with Jim Hess and give his opinion about this new star, Jimmy Golden. And utilizing wrestlers to talk over matches like this of their next opponent, such as the case was here with Golden in the ring and Hodge at the desk, is a very effective way to promote both wrestlers at the same time. And it also helps me to solve another problem by ensuring that I'm going to be giving less time to my renegade commentator, Big Jim, to screw things up, right? So Danny's there to talk, you know, and Danny feels about him like I do. So Danny gives him absolutely no time to talk. And Danny just takes the whole interview, takes the whole match, does all of the talking. In this First TV to promote the Coliseum show, we've covered the main event. We've covered the tag championship. We've covered the Bobo Brazil and Crazy Luke Graham title match. And we've covered Golden and Hodge match. Pretty darn good job of accomplishing something with a television program for the second Coliseum show.
So as we talked about earlier, this is a unique situation you're in. You're used to having a show on Friday and TV the next morning. In this case, you have 2 weeks of Saturday TV followed by a Sunday afternoon show. So for the case of the second episode, the card is the next day in the afternoon. What did you do on that second episode, Ron?
Well, on the second one, we're going to cover everything again, but we're going to change it all around. And that's really important. We're going to do kind of basically the same thing, but we're going to everything on that program is going to be different. We're going to have Crazy Luke Graham actually wrestle on TV that day, and then he's going to interview live after his match about Bobo. And they have history. So, you know, he's got a great interview there, and he's a great talker anyway. Then Ron Wright's going to watch the Wild Al Velasco and my match, or the short match that it was, and watch us fight to the dressing room. And he's going to – and he'll be following that when he watches that film with a live interview. I'm going to come out and talk about my side of the story again and be able to interview about my match again. Les Thatcher and Nelson Royal this time, instead of Mantell and Foley, it's going to be Royal and Thatcher that's going to wrestle in a live match, and then they're going to come immediately to the desk and talk about their title match. So this show, Danny Hodge works a match, and Jimmy sits with Big Jim. They just switched places from the week before. Hodge works, Jimmy sits there and talks about all the respect and what an honor it is to wrestle a guy like Danny Hodge, and plays that young, handsome baby face deal. And what an opportunity for me if I were able to beat Danny Hodge here. I mean, he really accomplishes a great deal in his interview and getting himself over. And in the course of these two shows now, we've covered all the major matches. We've got conflicting viewpoints from both competitors. We've had two fantastic TV shows back to back. And that has to have a positive effect on the Coliseum show, obviously. But at the same time, it's got to help to build a bigger audience for the television program itself. Instead of using these guys that are nothing and don't know how to work, wait, these shows have been filled with tremendous workers talking about a tremendous card. And that is the way you build your company, is with TVs like this. So it's expanding our viewership, and it's obviously the best tool available for any promoter to put asses in his seats, is utilize that television.
It's a great build-up to the March 23rd show, but when we return, we are going to change gears, Ron, and we will discuss the events of the last Studcast involving your commentator, I believe you called him your renegade commentator, Big Jim Hess. Fans around the world have gotten extremely interested in hearing about this controversy brewing between the two of you on your TV show, and we're going to get to hear more about that in just a moment. But first, a word about Super Studcast number 16, available right now.
Patrons that have listened to Super Studcast number 16 with Les Thatcher and the revelation of Southeastern Wrestling's history are truly amazed with how two young wrestlers changed everything about television wrestling programs all over the world at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. The Stud always has great stories, but this Super Studcast is filled with fascinating facts that influence wrestling companies everywhere and, as a result, became the most successful small territory on earth. This 3-hour educational gem is what Super Studcast are all about. Saddle up now for the ride of a lifetime into Southeastern wrestling history that will never be forgotten at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast for only $2.99.
There you hear it. Super Studcast number 16, available right now at tnstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. Get to hear 3 hours plus with Les Thatcher. If you enjoy listening to Ron go week by week through the history of Knoxville wrestling, then you're really going to enjoy hearing Ron and his right-hand man, the guy that was right there putting the TVs together, Les Thatcher, going over the history of Knoxville wrestling and so much more. It was one of the most fun Super Studcasts we've ever done. I encourage you to check it out if you haven't already. TNstud.com or patreon.com/studcast. More information at the end of the program. But Ron, let's return. We've just built up the 23rd show, but there's still stuff we got to talk about from last week with Big Jim Hess.
Yeah, and then the following morning, you know, when I arrive at the TV, I have no idea what to expect from the man in charge of conveying my ideas and angles, my commentator, Big Jim Hess. We had not spoken since he exited the TV studio the Saturday before, out the front door. He didn't even come through the dressing room area because he knew I was mad at him, and he went out the front door. And it was a controversial ending to the program. So we're, you know, I really don't know what's going to happen here at TV. It's kind of like what Ron Wright did at Friday night. I have no idea how crazy things are going to get. So for those who might not have heard last week's Studcast, Big Jim decided to publicly criticize my new wrestling company, Southeastern. And I kind of cracked that door open for him to make some of those comments, but he broke the door down when he went way too far with his own thoughts about the company. And he and I exchanged a few words at the end of the show, and in a shoot interview, though fans watching probably were not aware it was a shoot interview, we have a shoot interview at the end where I'm really mad at him. I'm pissed at him, and it's the last place I wanted to be as a new owner of a wrestling company, to have a renegade commentator in charge of my best advertising medium, the television show. There was now an obvious difference of opinion between myself and the man that I was paying to get my ideas over each show. This just couldn't happen in my new wrestling company. And it's going to really affect, I think, at this point in my mind, my chance to survive here with this guy as my commentator.
What did he expect? What did he want? I mean, obviously, he knew that the company was sold, and he's not really acting in a way that you would think a new employee would act to win over the new boss. What did he expect? What did he want?
I think he wanted control. I think he had kind of, in a way, had control of what went on the show. Had a great relationship for many, many years, obviously, with John Cazana. All of a sudden, his old boss is sold out and he's gone. Here's this young kid who's come in to take over. And he's just, I think he's just, he's pissed. He's kind of pissed about how this has turned out. And I guess he doesn't like my ideas for making changes. Big Jim, he wants the show to continue just as he used to be before I came along. I think that's what it's all about. Before I bought out John Cazana, he had a show. He was accustomed to chaos on the show. There was no structure. There was no format. He liked it that way. I think he really enjoyed it that way. He had no consideration at all toward the real goal of a television program, which is to attract a new and much larger audience. That's the whole reason you have a TV, is to promote your event and to grow your company. Without growth in the number of people tuning in each week, there's no future for a wrestling company, or a chance for a wrestling company to be hugely successful as I had envisioned this company. To make my point about all this, I'd like to play an audio of an actual segment of one of John Cazana's old shows that I happened to see the other day on YouTube. And this took place prior, obviously, to my coming to Tennessee. But it's a good example of what I'm talking about concerning Big Jim Hess, my commentator, and other things are going to be very, very obvious during this YouTube video. And it's supposed to have been an interview with Ron Wright and Big Jim Hess about a problem Wright had with the referee the night before, but it's going to turn into a circus act as it develops. I mean, if you would like to see it, this is a rare video of John Cazana's old program that's on YouTube, and it's entitled Ron Wright at His Best. And if you go to YouTube and look for that, you'll be able to actually see this. But bear in mind that here you can only hear it. So I want to quickly describe what you can't see if you're just listening to the program today. First, there's no set behind Big Jim where all the interviews and talk segments take place. It's only a plain old light green wall with nothing, not even nothing on the wall that identifies that this is a wrestling program, or it could be a a sewing, a place where you learn how to sew, for that matter, you know. And to the left of that wall, if you're watching the show and you watch this YouTube, you're going to see another bare wall, but it's a different color. It's not even the same color as the background beside them. And it's separated from the other wall by about 5 feet. Now, this creates an opening between the two walls where wrestlers, I guess, were supposed to come in and out for interviews. Well, occasionally, while you watch this YouTube, you will see people walking back and forth through that little opening there, going from one part of the studio to another part of the studio. And it's extremely unprofessional, entirely unnecessary, too, because the cameraman shooting the set, he has expanded his shot beyond the set. He should be focused on the set. He's talking to Ron Wright and Jim Hess, but his shot is back off to where you are able to see this opening and you see these people walking by, and it has nothing to do with the program. And it could have been so quickly fixed by the director. All he would have had to do is say to his cameraman, tighten your shot up to get just the set. And this is also an example of the station's production crews inability to produce a quality show. It just, you know, when people see this, they will realize, if they watch good wrestling productions, this is absolutely outrageous. So as this audio plays, imagine being able to see into the darkness of this opening beside the set, and you're going to see several people coming and going as the interview goes on. So you're going to hear a referee, and later the promoter, John Kazana, will join Ron Wright and Big Jim. This is a pretty darn good example of what I had bought into and how much I needed to change in order to be a success. Brian, if you want to, let's go ahead and run that thing.
All right, we're back at ringside. You know, all kinds of wrestling action will be on the card Friday night at Chill Highway Park Arena. Tommy Gilbert asked for a match against Dandy Jack Donovan, who turned on Gilbert last night, left the ring after...
Turn that over and be quiet a minute. I've got a little something I want to tell you.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
How come you've got my chair run down slow? You've got it run down low trying to make...
I don't handle chairs, Ron. I don't have a thing in the world to do with it.
Put yours down there a little bit.
That's no
use. I want to tell you something. Let me tell you. I took that loudmouth, dumb old Dromo down there last night. I whooped that man to the point that they had to send 8 wrestlers and John Kazana and all the police in the building in there and hold me and pull me off of him. And that goes to show you what kind of man that he come out here and bragged that he was, what he was going to do to me. It looked like the thing got turned around down there.
Sign right over there. Ron Wright is like Castor Oil.
What that sign says. I took that man down there and whooped him so bad, humiliated the man when I got him tied down to where he couldn't run from me, that he got the worst whooping that he's ever had put up on him in his life, probably in the whole history of his wrestling career down there.
You didn't get a whooping.
I shamed him. No, I didn't get a whooping. What? You see any bruise marks on me this morning?
I didn't see any on Dromo.
Well, you ought to see him. He's down there this morning, beat up, looks so bad, he's ashamed. He can come up here and face this TV out at your own TV.
Well, it appeared to me like the both of you got
on
the referee.
Right cheek, and his left thigh swelled plumb shut. You tell me that he didn't get whooped and beat up down there.
I'd say the referee got whooped by both of you.
That just goes to show you how well that referee's not got no business of getting up there and sticking his nose in my match. Bill Dromo, he asked for that match. I, man that I am, went down there and accepted it. And what business has a referee got down there sticking his nose in it, trying to stop a match, telling me that I can't do this and that's illegal? When did all the man ought have done come down there and bought himself a ringside ticket, sat down there and minded his manners like the rest of them fans done left me alone?
You through?
No, I'm not through.
Well, have you wondered?
I was just sitting there waiting for you to open that big mouth again so I could tell you to shut up. You come down here, all you know to do is sit down here and lie. I don't know why the people down here don't get up a petition and have you fired down here. They ought to fire you and run you from off the TV hill. Hire me and take your place and give me your job.
Hey,
I do a 10-to-1 better job at it than you do.
It ain't me that got suspended.
What do you mean? What are you talking
about? You trying to get old Big Jim fired, and you got fired last night, old buddy.
What's this mouth nitwit of talking about?
You and Dromo both got suspended. That right there is the man that did it, and you're fine too, buddy.
What are you talking about? I called the commission last night. And I recommended that he be suspended for 15 days and a $100 fine.
Right.
You better have
No, wait a minute.
He's not got no authority to have me suspended. The only man that can suspend me is a commission.
Buddy, when you're in that ring, you're going to do what I tell you to. When I tell you to,
no,
it's
you don't want you mean you
would you like to make it $1,000, huh? And a year suspension?
Yeah, now we're going to go to a year and $1,000. You just on 50.
You don't do what I tell you to, when I tell you to, and you're in that rap
comment. I hadn't been told that they've come and suspended me. This is the
he
first time.
He told you last night.
He told
you
last night.
He
didn't tell me
I did.
Now, you didn't tell me.
I put it right on that PA speaker.
Loud mouth. Let me tell you something. These loud mouth idiot referees, they're low down, conniving. Don't stand there and tell me to wait a minute. I'll smack you from across the ring.
Go ahead if you prefer.
Just because they put a referee shirt on and hide behind them white and yellow and black stripes, they ought to be yellow stripes because yellow's all you are. Y'all eat none of you, nothing but a bunch of yellow-bellied nitwits.
Before you let your mouth run out,
you put your hand on this man one time, he can suspend you for 1 year and fine you $1,000. You want to go for it? Hit him.
Here I am. Right here. Are you going to... You didn't say I'm
stopped. Don't hide behind me. Oh, brother. There it was. Run Right strikes again. What I think now, he's getting me on a technicality there. He said you didn't say anything about smack.
I don't know what the results of this will be, but Brunson does have...
I want that man back out here, and I want to get on the telephone to the commission and see if I can get him a one-year suspension and a $1,000 fine.
Hey, how would you like to wrestle him?
Right there beside him.
Oh!
We don't have another referee, unless you're capable of
referee. What about you?
I can't do it anymore. My license ran out.
Well, I'm
I mean, in this case, it ran out real quick.
Well, I don't know. If you're going to go talk a while.
I don't need a referee. Just bring him up.
You don't even want a referee.
I don't need a referee.
You just
bring
it up and run
right. That's right.
Suits me if it suits you, John. What did Ron say?
Go find him.
But no, technically, though, he's been suspended in Knoxville, you said, so he can't wrestle. You'd be going against your own ruling. You suspended him for 15 days in Knoxville. If he were to get in that ring now, you and I would both be in trouble along with him.
Well, I didn't suspend him anywhere but Knoxville. I can get him somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, you can have him anywhere else.
All right, give him to me somewhere else.
How about
then?
Tonight?
That'll be
City.
Fine. That'll be
good
fine.
Deal. You can have it.
Be fine.
So tonight down in Lenore City, that's the way it's going to be. We're going to have Brunson and Ron Wright. Boy, I tell you, things are popping around this place. Let's break for this word. We'll be back.
Well, there you hear it, Ron. We didn't hear any warp your head off holds or anything like that, but a rather unique performance there.
Yeah, you know, and I noticed in there, Ron Wright said something about they ought to fire you. Well, you know, that's pretty prophetic right there, because it's not going to be long until that's going to be the case.
I'll tell you, the Jim Hess is one thing, but Ron Wright running from the referee, who's, you know, yelling at him that he'll do what he says, and then he hits him, and then he starts doing a chase with Ron Wright. Ron Wright's running away from the referee. The top heel is running from the referee.
Yeah. Like he's scared of the referee, you know. I mean, it's crazy, you know. And I saw this, and it automatically made me think of my stud cast here, because you know, I've been trying to explain kind of what it's like, and that's a pretty good indication there of exactly what went on. And I've obviously my work's cut out for me at this point to change this poor production into an award-winning one. That's what I want. I want an award-winning type of wrestling production, certainly not anything like this. So when you stack on top of all that, a commentator that doesn't see the need for change, he's happy with this program. This is exactly what we want. This is what we do. You know, I think he said that to me a couple of times. This is what we do here. We're happy with it. Well, I'm in a very difficult position, especially when I find out just how much influence my commentator has at the television station that I'm working with. I wasn't even aware of this. So let's take a real quick look here at who Big Jim Hess actually was. And bear in mind, I knew nothing about him before I purchased the wrestling rights to Knoxville. When you do due diligence and you're going to buy a company, and especially a wrestling company, you really don't have to research your television commentator before the purchase. You know, that's kind of a normal part of it. And they come normally, a company, when you purchase it, with a pretty good commentator. But in this case, it's going to be a critical factor for me, for my future, of who I have here as a commentator. So Big Jim Hess, let's talk about it a little bit about who Big Jim was in Knoxville. He turns out to be, once I find out, he's a fixture in Knoxville television and radio. He started as a radio commentator and personality in the mid-50s, and he moved to TV in the early 60s when WTVK, this Channel 26, that's the station that this program we just saw and the little piece that we just heard, that's where it was made. And the big problem for me is that he works for the station my wrestling company airs on. And now he was a sports anchor. He's a producer there. He's an announcer there. He's a salesman for him. He loved wrestling, and he got hired by John Kazana because he liked wrestling, and he becomes the voice of wrestling. He becomes the show. And he's not just an employee that I pay. He works. And it's not like he just works for me. He's full-time employed by the television station and only part-time working for me. So for me, it's pretty easy to see if he has a problem or a dislike with me, he can take that and his negative opinion to the management of the TV station and easily affect my relationship with this television station. Obviously, he had a great influence, and I was afraid he might be undermining my efforts to improve the show with this station. I could have kept him and risked never being successful by allowing him to run the show, or let him go and make him mad and potentially risk losing this station and my opportunity to succeed in Knoxville because he's of his departure. To make a whole deal worse, Brian, if I approached a competing station and did not get on there, and this station found out about my attempt to leave, I would be destined to lose out on both stations, probably, and my dream of owning my own territory would have been gone instantly. This was a major decision for me as a 27-year-old owner, and I just turned 27 a couple of weeks before this show. I'm 27 years old. It's my first wrestling company. And if I do something to get rid of Big Jim Hess, I could be risking it all. Because if I rocked the boat, and especially if I threw Big Jim overboard, problem was, I just didn't know about all this at this point. And I'm just finding out about some of this stuff about Big Jim. And so I really don't have much choice. I finally decided not to fire him, but at the same time to try to make a move that would change everything for Knoxville Wrestling, and for my company, Southeastern Wrestling. I made up my mind to approach the largest and best television station in the market, WBIR-TV, Channel 10. It's a CBS affiliate. One that reached out more than 125 miles in all directions from downtown Knoxville, instead of the present station that I'm on at this point, that only goes out about 40 miles from the city. So it was a long shot, but I had a great deal of confidence in my ability to sell Les Thatcher and my ideas for a first-class wrestling show. We had been talking about it since I got there. About how we would change the TV and what we would do. But I'm in a position where I've got a problem with my commentator, and I got to make more than changes to my television. I got to change a lot of other things. So I'm going to go to this other TV. I make my mind, I'm going to go to WBIR. And if I can get a foot in the door, I'm going to try to sell the ideas that I have and that Les Thatcher and I have both come up with to create the best studio wrestling programs ever been done. There's still another small problem on top of all this. John Kazana, he'd been on this station the station that I'm talking about going to, WBIR, he'd been on there already for many years, and he'd had his show canceled because his program didn't get the audience the station wanted. So I was following a promoter that had failed on that station, and that fact was really going to make it more difficult to convince the management of the station that I was different and that I could be successful when John Kazan had failed.
Ron, everything you're going through at this period of time with Big Jim Hess, and obviously you just made the decision that you are going to fire him, the arrogance he displays, the issues you're having with him, do you put that all down to the fact that in his mind, maybe he thought you needed him because without him, you were going to lose that television station? He didn't think you had any chance of getting on CBS or any other channel?
Yes. I think that had a whole lot to do with it. I mean, and he also thought that he was doing a fantastic and fabulous job. I wish I had had the opportunity to have Eddie Graham send me a tape and sit down with Big Jim and say, I want you to watch Gordon Solie and see how it should be done. I believe, after dealing with Hess, that he would have not seen it. He would have not recognized how it should be done. I think he really liked the fact that he's not a wrestler, but he's still a star here. He's going to make himself a star. He interrupts guys as they're doing the interview. This was an example where Ron Wright talking, and he's talking over top of him about somebody's sign out in the crowd in the studio. Just whatever to try to steal the limelight. But, the bad thing about wrestling is if you're not on the card and you want to be a star, you're in the wrong place. You're sitting in the wrong seat. If he wanted to be a star, he should have trained himself to be a wrestler. He was big enough, probably. And he could have maybe filled those shoes better than he did as a commentator. He just was unhappy here. He sees that I'm going to make all these changes. We're now dealing with a format each week that he has to go by. He's never had a format. He doesn't want one. He feels like that they're unnecessary. He doesn't like the way the show is going. It's got some control to it. It has meaning to it. And that's not where he wants to go. It's a bad, bad situation for me.
Other than Les Thatcher, does anyone know your plans about trying to find new TV?
No. I mean, I would be really foolish to say anything to anyone. I would take that back, my dad. I talked to my father about it because he's had so much experience and had so much success. And he had never seen the television program. And once I explained to him what the guy was like, he was like, wow, man, he's a loose cannon. we're talking about ships again. I mean, he's going to sink you, man. If you're not careful, you got to do something. And so I told him, I'm going to go to the big station, the biggest one here, and see if I can get on CBS. And if I can, I believe I can. And I'd already told him, I told my dad, I know who I want to do the next show for me. I know who I want that commentator to be. And for me, there was only one choice because Les had really proven to me with a bunch of conversations that we had had that he's the man. He is entirely the best person I could select in that part of the country to do my wrestling program. And that's where I'm going to go down the road here. And we've just we've kind of torn into Big Jim here, but I just hope fans realize that we're talking about history here, and this history would have changed, in my opinion, dramatically the history of Southeastern wrestling had I stayed with this television station and with that commentator.
As we wrap things up, we want to remind you that you can become friends with the Tennessee Stud on Facebook. The page, Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. You can also follow the Stud on Instagram and Twitter at Ron Fuller Welch. You can follow me on Twitter at Great Brian Last, and you can hear me on the 605 Super Podcast at 605pod.com or available wherever it is that you find your favorite podcasts for classic wrestling talk and wrestling humor, the 605 Super Podcast. I also want to mention recent episodes of the Studcast are now available on YouTube. If you want to check them out, you can go to YouTube, search for Ron Fuller, or search for the Arcadian Vanguard video page, and you get to see episodes of the Studcast with exclusive Travis Heckle artwork. If you enjoy hearing about Jim Hess, then you have to see him in art form. And you can see that on YouTube. Check that out. And thank you to all the new listeners on YouTube right now. And of course, we want to mention the very popular Super Studcast number 16, available right now for 3+ hours with Les Thatcher, all about Southeastern and so much more. And now we have an announcement. We're very proud to announce the next Super Studcast, number 17, is with someone that the listeners have requested time and time again, and we have finally done it. We've pulled the trigger. The next guest, Super Studcast number 17, Ron's cousin, the great star, Jimmy Golden. That's right, Ron and Jimmy Golden on Super Studcast number 17. It will be released, part one, on Tuesday, May 14th, and it will follow Jimmy's career all the way through from Southeastern to his WCW days as the incredible Bunkhouse Buck. So you're definitely going to want to check that out. Jimmy Golden on the Super Studcast, Tuesday, May 14th, it debuts, patreon.com/studcast or tnstud.com. It's only $2.99 to get in the door. It's the best deal in wrestling. Ron, where are we going next week?
Well, Brian, I'm very excited about the next Studcast. We're going to find out if I made a huge mistake by running the Coliseum on a Sunday afternoon. We're going to find out the results of that particular spectacular card. And we're just going to continue to escalate this controversy with Big Jim Hess until it comes to an end. And it's really bothering me at this point, and I know that it is really has the potential to destroy my future.
Ron Fuller's Studcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. For the Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, I'm the great Brian Last. The story continues next week.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.